This is Will's Band of the Week for May 6th, 2012. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett live in studio.
Hey.
And Chris in cyberspace.
Here I am.
And we've put it together. Here we are. The listeners have been waiting for this. They've been thinking, God, those podcasts, especially with Will by himself, they are so boring. I'm about ready to give up on this thing. Then Barrett keeps it alive for a couple more weeks. Then Chris comes back and we're back golden once again.
This really is like the Beatles getting back together.
It kind of is, yeah.
Or at least like Kansas or something.
Do you think if we stopped doing the podcast for like 10 years and then we came back, we could just like make a killing? You know, the reunion podcast tour,
right?
You know, would just be incredible.
What do you think the chances Kansas are still touring and doing like and they're still doing like a casinos and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw...
There's only a way to find out stuff like that.
I put it at 89.3%.
There was a live Kansas concert on the Palladia channel that I watched about a year ago. And it was from, you know, it was from relatively, like, recently, like, maybe 08 or 09 or something. Mm-hmm. And they were playing some, like, small college theater. Might have even been in the state of Kansas. And it was... It was relatively enjoyable to watch.
Is it like a big deal to go see Kansas in Kansas, or like go see Boston in Boston?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or Chicago in Chicago.
The thing is, you know, for some reason, those band names, I don't know why they don't sound worse than they do. They should sound really terrible, right? I mean, imagine if there was like a band called Wisconsin. We'd be like, that's the stupidest band that I've ever heard of in my life, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be ridiculous. So
there's a band with Milwaukee in the title, right? Isn't there like a
the beer what made Milwaukee famous? Or yeah, what made Milwaukee famous?
Yeah,
yeah, that's the name.
Yeah,
going to see the Miami Sound Machine in Miami. I mean, we could go all night,
right? The band New England. You guys might not have known them. They were like they were trying to be the next Boston, and they called themselves New England, and they were like the same kind of arena rock like Boston, but they never hit it big. Yeah.
You could be like a Boston cover band and just name your band after like a neighborhood in Boston, like Fenway Park or something.
That'd be a good name, actually. Fenway Park.
Yeah.
You'd use one of those little Tom Scholz Rockman amps and you would sound exactly like Boston.
Or you could be Somerville, Massachusetts. That can be the name of your band.
Just How do we get in touch with the podcast, Will?
Oh, well, you know what you can do? You can send a good old-fashioned email to willsband@yahoo.com if you like the old-fashioned way. It's kind of old to use email, you know. We've skipped over just writing letters. You could write us a letter, too, but I'm not sure where you would send it. You can also contact us through the social media. That would be Facebook or Twitter, because we use only the top high-end social media. You can also post a comment on the webpage, which is willsband.net. And, of course, you can download the podcast through iTunes. And if you're on the road, check out the Stitcher app, where you can also get us there.
You really should give out like a P.O. box every episode, too.
I should.
So you can send us like an actual letter, and then you have to like drip candle wax on it and emboss it with your family seal.
That'd be good. You know, Baird and I were talking about this a few weeks ago. You know, we should be getting promos, right? You know, bands should send us like the master tape as soon as they finish recording, so they can get like a, you know, like a little advance mention on the podcast. Think of the buzz we would build up for bands. So, and
all right.
We were going to
call Radiohead and ask him for that.
Why not? Why not? I think they ought to do it. It'd be in their best interest. So, all right. So let's see. Is there any music news? We had all these deaths and then everybody seems to be living this week, which I guess is a good thing, right? Everybody's still alive.
Well, Junior Seau died.
Yeah.
Today,
sports guy
kind
died.
Of a weird.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. It's kind of sad. Yep.
While we're on the topic of sports.
Yeah.
Do you hear what happened to the Brewers today? They were beaten by Jeff Suppan.
Yeah, like the worst pitcher in the major leagues. But he was like 12-2 against them or something, I heard. For, you know, when he pitches for them, he gives up like 10 runs per game. But when he pitches against them, you know, he stifles them completely.
Yes, he's a rotting corpse.
It's one of those mysterious
things. When he's
involved
in a game with the Brewers will lose. It
right.
doesn't matter what team he's on.
Exactly. It's just if he gets anywhere near, if he's like within 5 miles of the stadium where they're playing, probably,
right,
then they're going to lose. So,
no, I mentioned the Beatles getting back together.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there some talk of like the sons of the Beatles, like,
yeah,
getting together for some show or something? Yeah. Did you guys already discuss this and I missed it?
No, no, I don't even think
Beatles
I heard that.
2.0.
Let's see. Is it like Zach Starkey or something? Is Ringo's son
a
drummer?
He's a drummer. Yeah, he's actually pretty good.
And then you got the two Lennon kids.
Yeah.
You got Julian and Sean.
Right.
And then, oh, I don't know, is there like a little Jimmy McCartney? I don't know any
what
McCartney
his name?
Kids.
What's that guy's name? What's his
Paul
son's
McCartney's
name?
Son?
Yeah.
Hmm.
He's the least well known. And then George Harrison's son is D-A-N-I, like Danny,
uh-huh,
whatever.
Yeah, he had the whole Indian influence going on there for a while.
He looks just like his dad. It's pretty crazy.
Mm. But, I guess I just don't see that band being an all-star band. How about any other bands whose kids could do it? Like, you know, Eddie Van Halen's son is the bass player now for Van Halen. And let's see, who played drums for The Who after Keith Moon died? Wasn't that a relative? I'm trying to think of who that was.
John Stamos. I don't know who did.
I know John Bonham's son.
Yeah,
who formed the band Bonham.
Band Bonham, yeah, that's right.
I believe
he was a drummer.
Plugged himself in for a few Zeppelin shows after the, you know, when they kind of wanted to get back together, so reunite.
Yeah, I think I had him mixed up with whoever was the drummer for The Who.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yes, Bonzo's son. Right.
How about Ted Nugent? Does he have a kid?
I'm certain he has several.
All right, that's enough about Ted Nugent. Oh, well, this isn't really music news, but I did go see Fountains of Wayne.
Oh,
the other
that's right.
Night. Yeah. It was pretty good. It was kind of fun. We were sort of thinking that they would play a bigger venue. They played at the High Noon, and that's what I think it has a capacity of 400. And
yeah,
it's not a, you know, it's not a huge place. And it was, as far as I could tell, not sold out. My son got a ticket like right, you know, the night of. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty crowded, so it was probably a near sellout. And they were good. They were very solid. They were just what you'd expect, you know, an experienced band. So they're going to be really tight, really, you know, pretty polished and sounding good. And the crowd was very interesting. It was, you know, in some ways it was kind of like the Wilco crowd is a little bit of, you know, the dad rocker people. Mm-hmm. But I would say there were, well, I was going to say there were more couples, but at Wilco there were a lot of couples. I think it was a little bit, I think the Wilco crowd is like 80% people like us, right? And I think the Fountains of Wayne crowd was like 60%, a little more interspersion of demographics.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there,
Barrett and I actually went to go see them at Summerfest 1 year, did we not?
Define C. That's
yeah.
not maybe the right word I would use.
You mean you were there when they played?
We were witnessed. I heard them.
Yeah, yeah, I think we tried to go onto the side of the stage and see
yeah.
a little bit of them, but it was bad news all around. You just it's
tried,
so crowded you can't
see
anything.
Our classic Chris and Barrett Barrymore trick.
Yeah.
Just slide along the right side, and next thing you know, you're like standing
now
on
you
the
just
stage.
Gave it away.
Oops.
We went, we were like right at the front. I'm sure I'm in Chris Collingwood's photo, you know, when the band member takes a photo of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so my son and I were standing right there. He braved the opening act, which was this woman named Nicole Atkins, who I thought was a very, very good singer who didn't really have exceptional songs. You know, she needs some better material to work with, and then her voice is really, really good. So, yeah. All right, there's your report, but they're definitely worth seeing. And this is another thing. The bass player, whose name is Adam Schlesinger.
Yes.
He is the, like, you can kind of tell he's the mastermind of the band. he's got that wry sense of humor. He's got that little smirk on his face, and that humor of the band comes from him. You can kind of tell.
Most bands are like that, isn't that true?
That the bass player is like the coolest guy in the band. Yeah, I think that's basically it. Yeah,
that is weird though. There are some bands where you can tell. I mean, generally you think the lead singer is the titular head of the band, but
right,
there are some bands where you can just tell like the bass player or somebody else is, kind of runs the show.
Right.
I believe Fall Out Boy is something like that. Like the lead singer, you know, is flashy and all that stuff, but apparently the mastermind behind the whole band is like this other dude who's really famous now or something like that. I don't know. I know very little about them, but.
Well, the trivia that you guys probably know about Adam Schlesinger is that he wrote the song That Thing You Do from the Tom Hanks movie.
Ah.
That's right.
Yeah. So, in fact, I had a big debate with a friend of mine one time. I think I told this story in the podcast. I'm getting old now. I start telling stories over and over again. Oh, my God, he told that one already. But we had this argument because my friend was convinced that Tom Hanks had actually written that song.
Like,
he didn't. Adam Schlesinger wrote that song. So
I had actually heard the same thing. Yeah. I know Tom Hanks wrote and directed the movie.
Yeah, the song was not written by Tom Hanks. It was written by Adam Schlesinger of Fountains of Wayne, just so you know. All right.
So Gary Busey didn't write
all those Buddy Holly songs? Yeah.
Val Kilmer didn't write all those Doors songs?
It's so sad to learn that, isn't it? Yeah. All right. Well, no deaths, no more music news.
I'll tell you one thing that I would like to bring up.
Okay.
Now, Barrett is a fan of the band Air, correct?
Yeah.
Now, they just had this recent album where they essentially provided new music to the Georges Méliès silent movie, Le Voyage dans la Lune. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Okay. Keep going.
Yeah.
I recently have been really getting into like silent movies.
Uh-huh.
Like Netflix has opened up this whole treasure trove of like old silent movies to me. And there are some that have like new music to them and some that have the old music. And it really makes all the difference in the world, kind of how you view them. So I think there's actually like a whole cottage industry for like cool bands to go back and re-record some of these. I mean, because a lot of the old ones you get, you know, like the old, piano music and stuff like that. But I think there's a market out there for redoing some of these tracks.
Yeah, for the silent movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe you've watched one with like Soundgarden as the the soundtrack.
Yeah, Soundgarden did that that Harold Lloyd festival. They just played the whole thing live.
I've been watching like a lot of Buster Keaton movies, and I tell you what, they are absolutely amazing. Like we get so used to CGI and special effects and all this stuff, yeah. And these are just a bunch of dudes with a camera, and the athleticism is absolutely unbelievable. And they're slamming each other in the face with like rocks and stuff. It's absolutely unbelievable.
And they have to actually do it in the filming, right? Because you can't. The special effects aren't good enough to fake it.
There's no joke. I mean, these guys are, breaking bones and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. It's really kind of cool to watch.
Wow, you're becoming a really well-rounded person, Chris.
Yeah.
You know what you've got to try, both you guys, is going to Duck Soup Cinema at the Overture. Have you heard about that?
I've heard of it. I don't even know what it is.
They'll show an old like we saw a Harold Lloyd silent movie and Charlie Chaplin. And, you know, they've got this, like, million-dollar organ in there, right? They'll have, like, a local or some regionally well-known, organist, you know, that's used to playing in theaters. So he'll have a little score and, like, a little, monitor so he can see what's going on the film, and he'll play the thing live, and it's really super cool.
Yeah. I think that's how they did it back in the day. They would have somebody there, and then, there wasn't an actual you know, sheet music to go along with it. It's just essentially play whatever you can, and then it gives like little marks where things get tense, and you know, the piano right. goes dun 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 dun.
Yeah, yeah,
stuff like that.
Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah,
but yeah, I think you should have. I'm going to lobby for Buster Keaton night at the coffee shop.
We could do that.
I think you can get people there. I mean, if you watch some of these stuff, watch for the people listening at home. Go watch Sherlock Jr. It's absolutely unbelievable.
So if I were to watch that, would I get it? Like, you don't need to have like references from the like that era. Like, I don't really know what's the humor like. Is it slapstick kind of stuff?
It is some slapstick stuff, but you know, you can see they're just trying to figure out like camera tricks and all that stuff. I mean, I think it's from 1924. Sherlock wow. Jr. is from, but. You know, just the precision with which these stunts are done. I mean, someone will swing an axe within like an inch of some guy's head. And, you know, they had to practice that probably for 3 days to get it right. And now it's just kind of the stuff that we just kind of take for granted.
Wow.
But, yeah, the stories are good. I mean, there's kind of a, you know, there's always a bias towards things that are new that like, you know, as we move on and people get smarter and all that kind of stuff. You know, people back then weren't as smart, but I mean, they were so creative and so inspired in what they were doing. It was really something I'd recommend.
All right. That's the that's a recommendation of the week by Chris.
Silent movies.
Yes.
There you go.
So, do you guys know there's a new Jack White album?
Is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you told us to listen to it for the podcast.
I did. I did. It's hot off the presses, and it's number one. On the, I think the U.S. charts. The little blip I read today said it's the first album that he has had, you know, been involved in that has been number one. Like, none of the White Stripes albums hit number one on the charts, apparently. Nor did The Dead Weather or The Raconteurs. So, here we are. Jack White has arrived, if he hadn't already. So, about 3 weeks ago, Grant and I, when we did the podcast, we got into a little discussion about Jack White, and I was saying, I think he kind of agreed that, you know, he was in a little bit of a slump, I thought. Like, the last few things he had put out, I just could not get into at all. This one I'm liking more. I'm kind of, I'll just say it now, I'm kind of thumbs up on this thing. you know, I'm not, like, 100% going crazy over it, but I you know, I'm pretty happy with it. So, have I set myself up to pick the first track, or is one of you guys want to?
So I think you've got to.
I have.
You have.
And I can't waste my pick on the obvious one. We'll play that one later if you guys don't pick it. So I'm going to go with, this is one thing I think about Jack White that is kind of cool. He can play a riff that is so simple that if somebody else played it, you would just say, this is dumb. You know, this is just, it's too simple. It's ridiculous. But somehow he can do it and get away with it, like, you know, he's kind of having fun, and it's just really simple but kind of cool. So here's one of those. It's called Freedom at 21.
Smile on her face, she does what she damn well please.
That's Jack White. The album is called Blunderbuss. Is that a word?
Blunderbuss. That's a
is that a real word?
Gun. It's one of those old pilgrim guns.
Yeah, Barrett knows that.
Big,
and how,
big
and how do you know that?
At the end. How do I know that?
Yes.
I don't know. Because
Is it because they always try to sell them on Pawn Stars?
Is it?
They,
oh, well.
Yeah. Maybe. Every other show, somebody walks in with a blunderbuss.
Ah. Maybe Jack White watches Pawn Stars.
Jack White was on American Pickers once. They went and they found like a giant elephant for him to buy for his studio.
Wow.
Like a big stuffed elephant. Yeah. So I think he watches those shows. I think he's big on the History Channel.
Ah. All right.
Well, there you go.
That's wow. There's a little background on the name of the album that people aren't going to get anywhere else.
Blunderbuss.
Go to YouTube and search Jack White American Pickers, and you'll see that episode.
All right. Who's up next? Who's going to take it? Who's going to claim the next track?
I'll take it.
All right.
I've got, I'm not super familiar with the names. I've got just the word weep written on a note here. So the full name of that song.
That would be Weep Themselves to Sleep.
There you go. Number 7.
So that's the piano, a reflection of the piano side of the album, right?
Yes.
Generally, the first half is more guitar rockin', and the second half is more acoustic and piano and maybe a little bluesy kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You stole the exact point I was just about to make.
Yeah.
That the first half seems to be like a lot more of the stripesy types of stuff.
Yeah.
And then the album ends with like 4 or 5 songs that are a little more deliberate, I guess you'd say, or more experimental. And those are actually the ones I think I like the most.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and it's
go ahead.
Yeah, I think that makes it kind of interesting because when I first listened to it, I was immediately more drawn to the first half. And then as I listened to it more, the second half kind of grew on me more. So I sort of liked the whole thing.
Well, one of the songs I was going to pick was number 12, which is called "On and On and On," which is one of those, kind of more experimental songs, I guess.
Maybe we can talk about this. We can talk about this more afterwards. But first of all, isn't there a Wilco song called "On and On and On" on "Sky Blue Sky"?
I don't know.
Okay,
there's
you guys are kind of silent.
Song called "On and On," but
and when
play the song and then look it up. How about that?
Okay, we're gonna play the song first.
on my way, and I'm blunder, my head falling under, a blanket of shame.
Yeah, yeah. So it seemed like Jack White was kind of slipping into like Dave Grohl territory there for a while, where you didn't know if he's still, you know, he's kind of pent up with side projects, and you never knew what whether he was going to show his chops again. But I do like this album quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah, I like that one too. And but did you guys get the feeling like that song in particular? I think it's really good. And but I was thinking, God, is this a cover? Like, it really sounds familiar. And I kept thinking to myself, God, I wonder if it's a cover or not. And then I actually looked it up, and, you know, nobody said it was a cover, so I guess it's not, you know? It just sounds, There's a familiar sound to it. I don't know if that's a bad thing, you know? It's just, and I've verified that the last song on the Wilco Sky Blue Sky album is called On and On and On. It goes like this. We won't interrupt the podcast too long, but...
Does it go on and on and on?
It kind of does, yeah. But,
hey-o.
It's a good one. It's a good one. So, yeah. So, well, you know what? I think, I really think that we should play the track that, like, is... There's one White Stripes song on this album, right? You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Like, if any of this album is a White Stripes song, this is it. That's 16 Saltines. Now that's just totally rocking, right?
Yeah.
And this is what I was thinking. He has a lot of discipline. If he can do a whole album, and he's got that cool guitar sound, and he doesn't use it again, you know, that shows discipline. Because if I got that guitar, that rocking guitar sound, I'd want to use it like over and over again.
Yeah.
That's the Turn It Up Loud song.
I had two songs picked. I had my mellow song, and I had my rockin' song that I thought was the Stripes song, which is number 8, I'm Shaken.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That one's like
play
the more...
a little bit of that if you want.
Okay, that's like the more bluesy rockin' song, right? Yeah, we'll play a little bit of it.
Yeah.
pain in my knees and a wobble in my walk, and I'm trembling. That's right, you got me shaking. When you take me in your arms to talk romance, my heart starts doing that St. Rita dance, and I'm fancying. Yeah. Oh, and I'm shaking. Early in the morning time, late in the middle of the night, whenever this chill comes over.
Yeah, that's pretty White Stripes-ish, too.
There you go. Riff heavy.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. One thing I was thinking is, like, when they do the backing vocal, you know, and it kind of stops and they go, woo, right? Is it like $3 million musicians doing harmonies, you know? You're Jack White, you can just invite anybody you want, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
The only people who can invite a bigger crowd is the Flaming Lips, right? From Barrett's album from Record Store Day.
Have you guys heard any of that?
No, I heard one song.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good. I heard the one with Tame Impala.
I know that they're on there, but I don't know it well enough to remember which one that is. But my son, who's 11, is in his project now is digitizing that. So he's got this.
Is he going to do it?
He's got it half done.
All right. So we can actually maybe... listen to it and play it on the podcast. I mean, Wayne Coyne wouldn't get mad at us, would he? As long as it's okay with Wayne.
I could bring a record player here and we could put a mic up to it.
So it's the same thing. We're just using a different method, too.
If I turned it into digital files and share it with you guys, then maybe you'd have a problem with that.
You're not going to sell it, though.
I'm not going to sell it.
So, well, if Wayne objects, we'll just take the podcast off.
Are you going to play it on your Victrola?
There you go.
Yeah. Barrett has a Victrola. Cool. I hope he does that. So anyway, I was just going to say, I already said it, that I'm sure there are a lot of like prominent guest musicians on this thing. But of course, because I didn't buy the physical CD, I only bought the digital version. I don't know who the credits are.
Yeah.
So that's a disadvantage, I guess.
Big disadvantage.
Yeah. If I had bought it on Record Store Day, I would know the answers to this. Yep. And we'd be telling the listeners all the great guest musicians who are on this album, and now we don't even know.
If there were only a way to know these things without... But there isn't. It's not like we're at the library and we can look things up.
Right. All right. Any closing comments on Jack White, or have we stated what there is to be said?
You guys both said you liked it a lot. Well, do you like it a lot, Chris?
I like it. I wouldn't say a lot.
Yeah. I'm going to put myself right between you guys. I think Will likes it a lot. I think I have the potential to like it a lot. I'm liking it more than I thought I would. Before I listened to it, I was really sharpening my claws. I'm like, I'm going to rip into this thing. I did not want to like it. Which, that's probably not cool. I probably shouldn't admit that. But
yeah, you should be more optimistic. Like,
yeah.
If I like it, then this is great.
And I guess I kind of wanted to like it. But I did find, as I listened to it, that I was saying to myself, you know, this is just kind of enjoyable. Isn't it kind of nice when you can put an album on and you're driving in your car and you're just like, yeah, right. It's enjoyable to listen to.
One thing,
even his weird stuff, and, you know, as diverse as this album is, it's a pretty enjoyable listen, I think.
And it's like 37 minutes long, which I think is a positive.
He doesn't overdo it. I mean, maybe he recorded like
so many
3 hours worth.
So damn long. You never really get to learn, you know like the last 3 or 4 songs. You know what I mean, Chris?
Yes, I do.
Like, you mean like that last Christ. Broken Social Scene album that we talked about?
Yeah, you're going to get, you're going to raise Anurag's hackles talking about
Broken
Social Scene like that.
Canadian Heroes, right? Yeah.
But
all right.
Well, it used to be that you had to limit your albums to, what, like 74 minutes or something? But now in the digital age, you could probably just go on as long as you want.
Well, when they were LPs, it was really like, what, 48 or something? I mean, realistically. And then CDs are, about 74. But now you can... Now, I was looking at one the other day, and there was an iTunes bonus track that was 13 minutes long that brought the whole thing to like an hour and a half. Because it doesn't matter, right?
That's
do whatever you want.
That's ridiculous.
It does seem ridiculous. But
back in the old days, any album that was over 45 minutes was a problem. Because it couldn't fit on half of a 90-minute tape.
Exactly.
Like, God.
Exactly. You have to have one of those T120s. And then the tape was really thin, so it was really unreliable because it would like, it would tangle up and stuff.
I might have told this story before, but I used to have a tape copy of Elvis Costello's Imperial Bedroom. And the last song is Boy with a Problem. And I probably heard it, I don't know. How many times have you listened to that Y-Oak? That's how many times I listened to this album, Chris, back when I was young.
Wow. And so you're up to almost 100.
It would be like if, Chris, if the last song on that Y-Oak, all of a sudden you learned. There's like another minute. Like, you know.
What?
So you never knew that.
It'd
like,
be like
you
there's
learned
an extra page of the Declaration of Independence. Like, holy shit.
So the song ended on your tape, and you kind of just assumed that was the end.
No, I knew. I mean, it would cut off an awkward
just, that's just how you learned it.
Thing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when I got a CD copy of it or later on, it's like, wow. Cool.
Back in the Wild West days of the internet, like when you could kind of go on Napster and just kind of grab whatever you want, you know, you could set it up and to download all these songs. And like maybe 12 or 13 years ago, I set it up to download Nick Drake's Pink Moon. And so I had all these files downloaded. I burned them to a CD, listened to it. Then maybe like just a couple years ago, I went out and I bought the actual physical copy and realized I was missing the last song. In the Morning, which is just an outstanding song, and here I'd been listening to it all along without that song. It was like
that's great.
It was like the birth of another child.
Yeah
Wow.
Which knowing me could happen at any minute.
It could at the rate you go. Yeah,
I know. I just keep making more of them.
That's right. Yep. And you still haven't broken out of your house, right? Pretty soon you're just gonna, I don't know. I'm thinking of like the Reggie White story about all the Mexican people living in the houses. Remember that? It was really bad. Don't you remember that? Oh my God. He went on some kind of
remember that. And he said like the Japanese are turning TVs into watches and stuff.
Yeah. And he said the Mexican people are great at crowding a lot of people into houses.
He was trying.
It was a little ill-advised. I don't think he had bad intent. Yeah, I really don't. I think he just, he was
right.
Just,
he was celebrating diversity in a really awkward way.
Right.
So in my awkward way, I was saying that's where you're headed, Chris. You know. All right. Where are we now? There's a Twee album we were going to talk about because because Quiz. Speaking of, I'm going to leave that in there because that's just so perfect. Quiz
wants to talk about the Twee album.
We got the Flaming Lips and their Heady Fwens, you know, and I think it's just causing, I don't know. Okay, so there's a Twee album, and it's called Allo Darlin'. Okay, I'm just going to say one thing. That is, there are now two albums this year by bands whose albums I had heard previously, their first album. This is their second album, and they improved on their first album. And Allo Darlin' is one. I heard their first one, and I was just totally underwhelmed, but I thought I was supposed to like it. I didn't really. This one's better. This one's better. The other one was First Aid Kit. I don't know if you remember that one. They were, you know, they had an album out a year or two ago, and I was completely like, okay, it's not that good. But the new one is great. So, Allo Darlin', Chris, tell us about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is a band that is headed by a woman named Elizabeth Morris, who is actually, you know, you think of these Twee, Bell and Sebastian-y types of bands, and they're all from Scotland or England or whatever, but she's actually Australian and did not move to London until 2005 when she started this band later. But yeah, I mean, it's well within the camera obscura, framework, female singer. We listened to Hospitality earlier this year. I thought it was kind of within that vein.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually the exact opposite of you. I loved the first, Allo Darlin' album.
Hmm.
And, you know, I just thought the hooks were a mile wide and it was just kind of, you know, I kind of like the humor that was in it, where they just kind of jump into a Weezer song in the middle of a song and then get out. I like this one a lot too. I think the hooks aren't exactly as big as they were on the first album, but you know, it's certainly my type of music, and I like it quite a bit actually.
Interesting, because Maybe it was just that I thought I was supposed to like that first one more. I don't know. It disappointed me a little bit. So what should we start out with?
Let's start out with a song that I think is a good representation of their sound, which is number 6, and it's called Wonderland.
Hello, darling. The album is called Europe.
I do admit that knowing that she's Australian, I whenever I listen to those songs, I wonder whether the Australian twee accent is exactly the same as the British twee accent, because they seem to be, unless she's just kind of, she's adopted it.
Yeah, well, it makes sense now that you mention she's Australian. It fits, you know. But I don't know if I'd really be able to tell if I didn't know that. But also, I have to credit her for moving to London rather than moving to Brooklyn, right? Somebody's got to not move to Brooklyn.
She might have just stayed where she was.
What would they sound like if she had moved to Brooklyn instead? There'd be a little more reverb and a little more distortion, right? Maybe a little feedback.
Yeah. This is actually something that I've thought about quite a bit, though. This is a broader topic, but like on their first album, they have a song called Silver Dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've wondered about like British bands that do songs about American currency, like why wouldn't their song be about like pounds and shillings and pence or whatever?
Yeah, interesting.
So is that in Britain? Do they think that bands that do that, English bands that do that, are like reaching for America and trying to be more relevant in America? Like that's kind of a sellout type of thing.
Boy, I don't know. I think you have to ask the artist.
Because Radiohead also has a song called Dollars and Cents on one of their albums.
Hmm.
And I think that's when I first thought of it. I'm like, why are these foreign bands talking about American currency?
Let me ask Barrett this. this woman is Australian, and they've got a song here called Tallulah. So is that a go-betweens
that's
reference?
That's a go-betweens
reference. I'm sure hoping it is, because yeah, that's cool if it is. Yeah.
What else is Tallulah besides?
I don't know. There aren't that many Tallulahs.
I'll tell you what, though, Will.
Yeah?
In reading the biography, apparently the Go-Betweens, the male member of the Go-Betweens, I forget his name, is like one of the biggest kind of backers of this band.
Well, the only living one left is
Robert Forster.
So. Yes, there you go.
Well, then it's definitely,
these guys went up.
That's cool.
In my estimation, then. Because he is...
well, you know, Barrett
is cool
and
as
I, at least, we are like big Go-Betweens fans.
You'd maybe, it's, you know, kind of a 4-year time a little bit, Chris?
But no, I have Go-Between's album, and I've listened to it and like it quite a bit. Well, I'm just not the expert that you guys are.
The Tallulah album in particular is just a fantastic album. You listen to that album. I hereby assign you to listen to that album, Chris.
Be the one I have. I don't know. We'll go.
All right. Barrett, do you want to make a pick? Have you listened to this?
I didn't get the memo on this one.
You didn't get the memo?
Did not talk about...
He got the memo. Chris didn't. He did get the memo, didn't he?
Something must have been lost in like the conversion rate between.
You know,
like,
there's like a reply and a reply all.
Yeah,
you know,
there was a conspiracy. Okay, well, you know, I'd be happy to make two
picks. Number seven.
That's Tallulah. All right, let's play some Tallulah.
Drive from St. Lucia to Surfers in my old university car. We had the windows down for our aircon. The door was so hot that you burned your arm. It was the tail end of a summer, and the heat washed in with the breeze, and you were searching for something to sing to. The radio played another terrible song, but lucky for me, you found a tape with Tallulah on, and it's been a long time since I've seen all my old friends, but I really love my new friends. I feel I've known them a long while. Then last summer you wrote me a letter on the back of a surf magazine. You said you didn't have any paper, and maybe you wondered what could have been. So I sent you a postcard from Berlin of a fat man eating a sausage. It hid the fact I was hiding as the DJ played another terrible song. But lucky for us.
That's the mellow one, Tallulah.
Yeah, I do appreciate, as I said before, the kind of the humor and the fact that she sprinkles her songs with kind of pop culture references, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so I've got two, but I guess I have to just pick one because there's two standouts, of which I can only pick one. So let's go with number eight, The Letter. By what you've lost, but what you can find. That's the letter. That's the band Allo Darlin, and the album is called Europe.
Yeah, it's got everything you could get asked for. Although, I guess in my twee, I do enjoy a bit of violin, which is missing on this album. I think that takes it to a new level, but can't get everything you want.
Yeah, you can't have it all, you know.
Not a lot of glockenspiel either. I kind of like
that's right.
Not a lot of flugelhorn.
That's right. Well, they can save those things for their next album.
I've also verified that the physical copy of the Go-Betweens that I own is 16 Lovers Lane.
Yep, that's a good one, too.
Which begins with Love Goes On, which is a song I enjoy quite a bit. So
that has Streets of Your Town on it, doesn't it? That's my favorite one.
Indeed it does.
Does it have Is There Anything I Could Do on it?
Anything you could do what?
Is There Anything I Could Do?
Oh,
is that one on? Is that one on 16 Lovers Lane, or is that on?
Yes,
because I think that was Barrett's favorite. So we have some favorites on that one too.
We almost just had like a Who's on First situation.
Yeah, I think we did.
Is there anything I can do on it? Well, I don't know.
I want to name one of the songs. Well, I can do it.
You could use it as a coaster for a coffee cup or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yes, that song is on there.
Well, one of my bandmates also loves the Go Betweens, and he thinks that we should do in one of our gigs. We should do like a little subset of Go-Between songs. So we're working on a couple.
Oh.
We've practiced two now. And we have a violin player, I can tell you. And she nailed the violin part on one of them. We were both looking over there and saying, holy crap, she nailed that violin part. So it was cool.
When you do stuff like that, though, don't you have to like keep it quiet from everybody and then just kind of spring it on the crowd? And
here's sort of the like, problem. Yeah. Here's the problem. If you play, like, in front of the people that we generally play in front of, and you play a Go-Between song, there's nobody who's ever even heard of the Go-Betweens. They don't even know what it is. We were talking about that the other day, and we were just saying, well, you know, if they don't know it, they'll just think it's a pretty good song. So
that's when you have to spring in and say,
yeah,
here's one that I wrote.
Yeah. Play. Yeah. This one I wrote back in 1984.
Awesome. This guy's great.
Yeah. Nobody will know. Grant McLennan can't complain.
No.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah. All right. Boy, that's some darn good music. I think the title track is great, too. I don't know what you think, Chris, but Europe, it's called. It's really good.
Yes, the other song I had written down was Capricornia, which I believe is two.
Yeah, that's two. That's great, too. So, should we play any more? Should we just say, you guys need to go listen to it?
Yeah, that's probably enough.
Yeah, tracks two and three. We're going to leave you hanging and tell you that if you get this Allo Darlin album, tracks two and three, we didn't even play those, and they're really good.
No.
So, if you like this genre, you know, this twee pop stuff, it's really good. You know, and the market is not oversaturated with this stuff, right? I mean, I think, you know, maybe tennis is a little this way.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, there's the old, you know, standbys, Bell and Sebastian and Camera Obscura.
I think tennis actually kind of veers a little bit more towards the kind of the 60s girl band type. I don't know.
Are they, they're halfway between twee and and that other band, what's that other retro band that just played and we didn't go see at the
Dum Dum Girls?
No, what's the one that the other band, you know, the guy and a woman, and they've got like that retro sound, and they just played at the Majestic like a month ago, and we
Cults.
None of us went.
Cults,
right?
Oh yeah. Yes,
right. See, they're halfway between Cults and Bell and Sebastian.
I wish we would have seen that Cults show.
It probably would have been pretty good.
Yeah, I think that would have been good.
We're at an age where we miss a lot of good shows, don't we? So
if they don't advertise in AARP monthly, then,
right?
You know, how am right. I going to find
Barrett,
out about
Soldier
it?
Of Fortune?
Soldier, yeah, right.
On the other hand, Neil Young and Crazy Horse apparently have gotten back together.
Yeah, and, well, I'm like so not excited about that.
You're not, huh?
I guess I'm not Neil Young at all, but like,
yeah.
I don't know. That just seems like a desperate thing, like, you know.
Yeah, but the guy's like 70. He can do whatever he wants,
right?
Yeah, he
can.
I actually saw them in 1992 at Marcus Amphitheater in Milwaukee, and it was Blind Melon, Soundgarden, and Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
That's weird. Oh,
so I watched the first two bands, and then Neil Young and Crazy Horse came on, and I'm like, my God, this is loud. So we left.
It was too loud for you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, there I am, like 20 years old, and it was just too loud, so I left.
Wow. So Neil was rocking then. He was like only like probably like 58 then or something.
Yes. Yeah. He was rocking in the free world.
Yeah. Keep on rocking in the free world. Oh, you got to like Neil Young.
So before we part here, I'm going to mention that a long time ago, maybe a year ago or more, Chris said that once we get up to 100 Facebook followers, we could put up a video that he...
There's recorded. A time limit on that.
I no, mean, there I assume is not.
Sometime by the year like 2085, we'd have 100 followers.
Did we hit 100? We were just at 99.
We were at 99, and then it went down to 98.
Oh, so somebody, we're now we're at 90.
Quit.
Somebody like said, "I have had it with this. Quit bothering me could, with these podcasts."
I wish we could tell you who it was.
I'm poisoning our followers slowly
because I want to. If this person is somebody I know, I'm not ever going to talk to this person again.
That's just inexcusable. Anyway, yeah, we only have 98 now.
So we need two more.
Okay, so tell your friends.
How about this, Chris? How about this? Two within a week?
Yeah.
Then we'll put it up. How's that sound?
I don't know. It's been over a year. You've had a year to get your 100.
Now, there was never a mention of 1 year.
What if you? This is a we thing. Yeah,
this is new conditions we. Being put on this. So
also, the other thing about this is that Chris Otepka liked our last podcast.
Yeah, that was nice of him.
At least he liked.
Yeah.
He felt compelled to click like, even though he probably didn't listen to it. But
you know, maybe he just liked the fact that we did it.
Yeah.
That's cool. We'll take that.
He acknowledged that we exist. That's
right.
Kind of cool.
I think so. Yeah.
So everybody get your moms to sign up and then we'll get 100 and then you can see Chris singing a song and playing guitar. We saw it. It's good.
If Absolutely. You promise them that, we're going to be at like 85 by next week.
It'd be worth it, though. It'd be just for that.
Maybe we flip the thing. If we don't get to 100, we're going to put that thing up there, right?
Yeah, we
That's
could
why
try
I said
that
if
too.
If I were to ever become like a male stripper, I would have to like run on stage naked and have women throw dollar bills at me to put my clothes back on.
Yeah, the reverse stripper. That's good. All right. Did we give the listeners their money's worth this week?
Yeah, we did. What okay. do we
every pence, every pound and pence.
And in post-production, can we come up with more music to talk about? I think we can.
Sure.
There's a flurry of stuff already out and upcoming. It's exciting. The music world is good. All right. It's time to say our thank yous and good nights and go ahead and give your long emotional speech if you'd like to. So, Chris, go ahead and give your speech.
Good night.
Okay, Barrett?
I want to thank my parents and then say good night.
All right, I'd like to just thank everybody out there who've just made my life so much better.
Thanks to the listeners, too.
Yeah, those people, too. Good night.
Night.
Night.